When it comes to home renovations, there's nothing more important than getting the kitchen right. So you've got two options. Have a crack at it yourself and then get someone else in to fix it, or get the team at Infinite Joinery and Designs in from the start to avoid a lot of stress and dirty looks from the better half. If you're thinking of renovating your kitchen, give Sam and the team at Infinite a call straight away. Specialising in kitchen renovations, they can also take care of new home joinery fit-outs, renovations, laundries, wardrobes. They have 3D design software, and Sam alone has over 20 years' experience in joinery and project management. Find them on Facebook and Instagram, or phone Sam on 0429 291 008, or by email, which is sam@infinitejoineryanddesign.com. So don't be like me, thinking you'll save a few bucks and have a crack at it yourself. Call these guys in so you can sit back and watch the experts go to work. This week on the show, a man whose alter ego is probably more well known than him, Nathan Hepburn, aka The Baron, for anyone who follows him on social media. For those who do follow The Baron on social media, they'll know he's a larger-than-life character with a unique and sometimes highly entertaining take on the world and the English language in particular. But as always, what we love is we get to know plenty about Nathan, the man behind The Baron, and his journey, as it hasn't been without its own unique struggles and challenges. Nathan chats about his work life as a fly-in, fly-out miner, and the challenges that this presents to workers and their families. And he gives some great insights into how he and his wife made sure that they didn't become another statistic of a failed relationship due to the nature of this work. He speaks about parenting and the challenges he's had with both of his beautiful children, in particular his daughter Evie, who was diagnosed with cerebral palsy very early in life. He speaks about how his family supported Evie and what his children have taught him. We speak about the varying businesses Nathan's had along his journey and what he's learnt. He gives great advice for others currently in business or thinking about going into it, particularly how to overcome mental hurdles and apprehension. And we couldn't keep the Baron in the box for too long. Naturally, he makes an appearance, and we speak about how he came about, how he's changed Nathan's life, and his plans for the future. Enjoy.
Talk hard!
Like, of course I'm not going to walk again. Like, that's just the reality, isn't it?
And the doctor that rang Mum said, oh, we've saved your son's life.
And I remember looking up and just saying, that wasn't out. And he looked at me and he said, no, it wasn't. But I didn't want to give you not out because you're my son. And I said, fuck me, Dad.
I just remember her telling us your daughter's got leukemia.
You're in school. Oh, we swapped class a couple of times.
Who's cluier out of the two?
Both got the same smartness. Not real smart at all.
If you are dedicated to something, as long as it's safe and it's not hurting anyone else, I don't think anything should hold you back.
Keep pushing forward, you know. Days get tough sometimes. You know, it does turn around. You just gotta fight for it a little bit.
I was like, why can't we be that 1% that survived? She said to me then, she goes, you were more like me than I ever realised.
The Talk Hard Podcast with Brendan Hinkson.
Well, for the first time ever, and we're all about firsts on this podcast, I think I've got a fella here that I might have to interview twice, because some might know him as Nathan, other people will know him as The Baron. He's highly successful alter ego on TikTok, which is, taken social media by storm. But he's come to us fresh this morning from starting his own podcast, The Baron File. So, Nathan Hepburn, a.k.a. The Baron, welcome to the Talk Hard Podcast.
Thanks, Brendan. How you going, mate? I have dived into it slightly, but never done like an interview sort of set up when it comes to podcasts.
Well,
which
I'll
is,
be
exciting
with you,
for
mate.
Me.
Working through it. Like I said, like it's the first time that we've had someone on that does have another alter ego that we've got to delve into, and we will talk about how the Baron came about. But one thing that I am very aware of with the Baron is one of his pet hates is grammar and the English language. So I don't know how he's going to go when he listens back to this, particularly my side of things. So it's got me on notice, that's for sure.
I've got to admit, I'm not great at it myself. It's just when I notice it, I'm like a dog with a bone. I've got to get it out and let everyone else know about it. I'm not the greatest scholar in the world, don't get me wrong. But
well, you've got your own university.
I do. Baron University is there. I just do wonder what they were thinking when they started spelling some of the words that we do speak. So, yeah.
So, obviously, we came to know each other through your work at TazRail. And, you know, big shout out to TazRail. I know a lot of those guys listen to the podcast because they give them a bit of feedback on it. And they'll certainly listen to this one, I'm sure. But one of the things that I love about the podcast is once I start talking to someone and learning a little bit about their background, like I said, a lot of people will only know you from your social media alter ego, but there's always a story behind everyone. So, and I know when I spoke to you, you didn't think your story was that exciting, which is another thing I love about Northwest Coast is they're that humble. But, you know, you haven't had it all your own way, and there's certain challenges that you've had to go through as well. So I'm really keen to unpack those things with you. But just for anyone that doesn't know your work on social media, just give us a bit of an overview of The Baron and and what he does.
So basically, well, the Baron, it is me. It's me. I heard, I'll go through a quick backstory.
Yeah.
Dwayne The Rock Johnson, the wrestler, he said, I can't remember if it was an interview, it might have been in a movie line. He said, be yourself, just turn the volume up.
Yep.
And that's basically the Baron. He is me. That's what I'm like. Not all the time, but that is genuinely what I'm like. I'm very loud. And I've just turned the volume up, and that's the character that I sort of portray online.
Yep.
Complain a lot about things online, especially, like, as we said, the spelling of words and English grammar and things like that.
Yep.
But I also do like reaction videos and things like that to people doing silly things with, you know, DIYs and cooking and things like that. I kind of fell into that. I do enjoy doing them, but I think that my audience enjoys them more than I do. I really like doing the English language stuff. I find that fun.
Because people send you like a heads up on stuff, don't they? Like, you've got to have a look at this.
I get tagged in hundreds of videos a day. Which I love, because it's almost like, I don't have to think about this. I can just do it. You know what I mean? Like,
you got your own producers.
Yeah, that's right. It's really good. It is great. But I'll never get through them all. But I just really like the space of social media. It's good fun. It's only ever lighthearted. I never do anything like serious, political, or anything like that. Yeah. I never dive into that sort of space.
Stay in your lane.
It's just about escaping the day-to-day grind.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a release for me.
Yep.
I can get all my anger out, and I don't have to, you know, bring it upon those around me. So I guess it's a bit of a release more than anything.
Yeah. Oh, they're bloody hilarious. And we'll talk later on about how that came about and how people can watch them. But one that I was fascinated with was, like you say, one of those reaction ones. It was this chick that ground up pasta to make pasta.
Pasta out of pasta. Yeah. Like, yes.
Why? Why would you bother?
I think she did it. I'm sure she made that video just to annoy me. It was a personal attack.
It was targeted.
I swear.
Yeah.
That one, I got tagged in that a lot before I did it. And I went and did it. And now, if I go live on TikTok or whatever, it's one of the ones that brought up a lot. Like, people come and say, is anyone making pasta out of pasta tonight? I'm like, oh, yeah. That was probably one of the worst ones I've seen. That was a beauty. So, yeah.
Unreal. So, like I said, obviously we'll go through your story as well, mate. So, it all started in Burnie, I believe. Is that right?
Yeah, Burnie.
Yep.
Yeah.
How was the childhood?
Pretty good. Like, I had a good childhood. So, my parents split up when I was three.
Yep.
I guess, I was born in Burnie, but then we went to the West Coast. We lived in Rosebery till I was three.
Yep.
When they split up, and then I come home and sort of live with mum pretty much full time. Like, dad was away working as well, so he was a minor, so working took him away. But had a pretty good one. It was good fun, lots of sporting activities and things like that. Yep. So,
you told me there was a pretty promising football career that could have eventuated out of it.
I feel like I had a good chance when I was younger, I'm inherently lazy, though, so I guess I took the road of, hanging out with mates instead.
Drinking and partying.
Yeah, yep. Some mistakes were definitely made. I mean, I don't think I ever would have made it to the top or anything like that, but I might have been a reasonable, prominent footballer at sort of maybe even a state level kind of thing.
Yep.
I played in, like, state rep games and things like that when I was underage football and things like that, and did quite well in them.
Yep.
A lot of touches, a lot of marks, things like that. But then just sort of, I guess I grew out of it. I loved it and always wanted to have it. I had a coach that told me I might make it all the way.
Mm.
Might have been the worst advice I ever got in that sort of realm.
Would you get ahead of yourself?
I think I might have done. It happened, I got injured in a game and I come off, hurt my shoulder. And the coach said, look, mate, there's probably no point us going back on today. You're probably going to go all the way anyway.
Yep.
Wow. Yeah, that was pretty much what he said. And he was pretty high up in the Mariners at the time. He was one of the coaches of the Mariners. So really appreciate him saying that. But yeah, it sort of, I won't blame that. And, I was always going to go the way I was going to go, I think.
Yep.
I was probably a bit too lazy to make it. I was never fast enough anyway. So.
Well, the Baron might never have come about either.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
Your mum, you told me, worked pretty hard when you were younger to...
Really, really hard to give me all the opportunities she could. So, single mother, she'd work 13 hours a day. When I was in primary school, I'd spend a lot of time at one of her friend's house who'd look after me while she was at work. I know she was on a very low rate, so about $5 an hour, I think she worked, 13 hours a day.
Yeah.
She got held up one night, Shaw Milk Bar,
shit,
years ago when I was about 7 or 8 then.
Yep.
I'll give or take a couple of years, so she's been through some pretty hard times, and you know, you're knocking off at 9:30 at night, it's pitch black dark and no one's around, and that sort of stuff happens. And as soon as she could, she went back to work because that's what she had to do.
Yep.
Do you know what I mean? There was no other money coming in. There was no other way we could survive. So I guess she basically put me first and provided. So, yeah.
What do you reckon, like, did you learn anything from her as a parent that you sort of put into your own parenting now that you've got your own kids?
Pretty much that, like, just to put the kids first,
yep,
all the time, wherever you can, give them as much, like, mum always gave me opportunity, like, when it was with, even with sport, like, between her and when dad could, driving me around the state to footy training, to footy games, to footy tournaments, yep, and things like that. And so that's, I guess, the thing that we've decided to do with our kids. That's what I'll do with my kids. So,
yep.
I mean, mine are very young, so 6 and 3, probably not at that level where you're driving around the state just yet. But definitely as much opportunity as I can, you know, the young bloke comes home and says, Dad, I want to try this. Well, yeah, let's go and try it then.
Yeah. Yeah. You're better off to try it and decide that you don't like it than not give it a go.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
And what sort of kid were you? You said that your mum sort of made a lot of sacrifices and put you first. Did you recognise it at the time, or did you still sort of play up and give her a hard time?
Yeah, no, I was, if I could go back and redo things, I would.
Yeah.
I'll never say I was a naughty child. I was never naughty. I was loud. I was cheeky.
Yep.
And
not surprised.
Not surprised. I was more of a class clown.
Yep.
Served
you well in
later life. Yeah, it has. And well, to be honest, it has. I must admit that. But yeah, I was a class clown. I was always, like, the teachers always said, Nathan would be a great student if he didn't talk so much.
How many people get that on their report card?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I'm not the only one, am I? Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think I got suspended once at school throughout my whole school, and that was it for me. I was then a very good student. Problem is that was in grade 8 or late end of grade 8.
Yeah,
so
right-o.
I only really had 2 years to sort of make it up to mum, and I was much better. But mum still to this day thinks that I didn't open a book throughout my entire school career.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Isn't it funny, though? I don't know whether times have changed or not, but like we were just saying, the amount of kids that say, you know, Nathan would be such a good student if he didn't talk so much, or if he wasn't the class clown and stuff like that, it's like back in the day, they always wanted to mould kids all into the one type of personality, whereas, like we were saying, like, your personality has probably never changed, and now it's sort of serving you better towards the end, but you just think of how many kids, how many opportunities and, you know, geniuses probably get lost through the system because they are tried to squeeze into one little box.
I never thought of it that way at all, but you're exactly right.
Yeah.
They may not have been trying to do that, but that kind of is maybe what happened.
Yeah. Yeah. I just know with my kids, like my daughter, who you've had a little bit of interaction with, she's a big fan of yours. I've never known my kids so excited to have a guest coming in, by the way. So you're not going to get out at the driveway without getting a photo with them.
That's fine, absolutely.
But like my daughter, you know, she's going through a stage of, you know, identity and that sort of stuff. And I said, well, be weird. If that's you, you know, just be you. And eventually your people will come to you. But a quote that I use with her all the time is, nobody normal ever achieved anything.
Yeah.
They're always weird in some way.
Exactly.
Or they're weird to someone who just doesn't understand that's how they roll.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, sometimes you've got to encourage the individuality rather than, like I say, try and squeeze people into a box. Because how many great ideas or great creative ideas are lost because, oh, no, you can't do that or you can't act that way.
That's right. Yeah. Run your own race, basically. Yeah,
absolutely. So you finished high school and you did 1 year of college and then told your mum that you weren't going back. How'd that go for you?
Oh, yeah, that was, had that conversation with her. I said, look, mum, I'm not going to go back to school anymore. Yeah. I'm just going to concentrate on footy.
And what was her reaction?
Well, you're going to have to get a job then and you're going to start paying rent. I said, what are you, honestly, I had no idea that answer was going to be. I thought she was going to support me and just go, yeah, no, go for it.
Yeah.
I was 16, would have been close to 17 then, and I said, yeah, I'm going to concentrate on footy and, you know, have a real dip at it.
Yep.
She said, yeah, well, you'll have to get a job and pay rent because I'm not supporting you while you do that. I was dumbfounded, mate. Yeah. I had no idea. Off I toddled, completely defeated up to Woolworths and become a checkout chick.
Yeah, yeah. That's another thing that I was going to ask you. Like, obviously, in this day and age, that was a pretty tough love way of going about it, wasn't it? Like, I think a lot of these days, you know, we wrap our kids in cotton wool and try to protect them and stuff, whereas she was like, well, right, if that's what you're going to do, then you're a man now. You've got to go and, you know, provide for yourself. And
I'm surprised that I was dumbfounded. Now I sort of think back and go, of course that's going to be the answer.
Yeah.
And, but I agree that I think we've definitely softened up on kids now. Yeah. Like, I have. Oh.
Yeah.
I'm so soft on my kids. Yeah. But I always
have the conundrum with them going to school when they get up and, oh, I don't feel well. And you're always looking at them trying to analyse, well, hang on, there's no blood gushing. You can still walk. Your brain still seems to be working. But then there's always that, what if you send them and there's a medical event at school, you're the worst parent in the
world. That's right. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I do that with my son, Alfie. If he falls over, I'll go, up you get. And so long as he can get up and he's okay, I'm all right then. It's all right. But yeah. If it's a heavy fall, I'm running over to pick him up.
I just know that, and again, talking about our parents, that came from, you know, my mum mainly. Like, we had to be pretty badly ill to not go to school.
Yeah.
You know, as long as our brains still functioned and our legs still worked, we were right to go.
Yeah. But,
and I think, as I say, I think of that little bit of that's flowed into me, because I don't want, you know, my kids to get to the stage where, oh, you know, I don't really feel like going today, or I'm a little bit off today. Well, the real world doesn't work that way, does it?
No, that's right. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And it was, I guess that was the same kind of approach that Mum took with me at sport when I was back in high school. Like, if I feel a bit crooked today, I don't feel like training, she goes, well, you can't play on Saturday then.
Yep.
If you're not going to train, you're not going to play. So I guess that's kind of the same. She took that route with me.
Yeah.
So I'll give her that. And she really did instill that you've got to go to work, or you've got to train.
Yep.
To have the fun times as well. So,
yeah, you got obligations.
Yeah, obligations. That's
So tell us about Woolies, because you didn't enjoy it, did you?
No, couldn't stand it. Not from the day that I got there to the day that I left. I couldn't stand it. I was at Woolies Upper Burnie. Most of the customers were great and that sort of stuff. Don't get me wrong. I just didn't like the job.
Yep.
I felt defeated doing it. Don't know why, because it was a good job.
Yep.
Like, you know, 18 years old, they were paying me reasonable money and I could do stuff what I wanted to on the weekend sort of thing. So, but I guess because I knew that I was working now and not living that free life, hanging out with my mates all the time.
Yeah.
It sort of felt like as if that was the end.
Yep.
I didn't realise that it was only a stepping stone job and you know, you could always move on sort of thing.
Yeah. I know that, obviously, as I say, and you get to meet everyone that comes through. Like, I've had jobs in the past too where you're dealing with, you know, the general public and all sort of walks of life. I think sometimes it does help you moving forward to learn to work with different personalities and that as well, because you'd get people coming through that would be happy to have a chat. You'd get people that have shit days, people that were probably rude to you, and you had to learn how to process that.
Definitely got a mixed bag up there. And whilst I've never thought of it, you're probably right, because I still feel now I can get along with all types of people.
Yep.
I feel I can find a way where I can get along, work with, or deal with any type of person.
Yep.
And it probably all stemmed from doing that job.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
You got all those personalities going through. So from there, though, mate, you canned that and eventually went to Launceston.
Yeah, I went down to Launceston. Yep. My uncle come up from Lonnie one day and sort of said, what are you doing? Hey, how's work? And I said, nah, I hate it. Rah, rah. And he goes, do you want to try swimming teaching? And when I was younger, I was always at the pool. I think there was one year when I was in grade 4, I went to the pool every single day. It was open for an entire year. Like, just didn't miss sort of thing. So I always loved swimming and, you know, being outdoors and all that sort of stuff and all sports. And I thought, oh, yeah, that'd be cool. I was 19. I was sort of 18 going on 19. I thought, that'd be awesome. I'd love to go down and do it. And yeah, I went down and did it. Got my swim accreditation. He paid for all that for me. He had his own. That was his swim school. And it was great. I did it for 5 years. I'll say it was great. It wasn't great. Towards the end, I sort of got sick of it, because, you know, most of the conversations you were having were with kids, and I had a lot of babies, so I was teaching a lot of babies to the swimming. So towards the end, I sort of got a bit jack of it, but. It was a really good role, and again, like, you're dealing with parents and things like that, so you know...
You said, you got a little bit bored with it and that sort of thing, but you said that you fell into a little bit of a hole when you're in Launceston there.
When I was in Launceston, so I was down there, I didn't have a licence, so I'd bus into Launceston, I'd get on the bus back home to come and play football on the weekends and things like that.
So who were you playing for?
That stage I was playing, I'd gone back to country football and playing for Yeoman.
Oh, yeah, yep.
I think, yeah. Yeoman Footy Club. And, yeah, I was, you know, if I'd come home, I'd drink all weekend. I'd play footy, drink all weekend, and I'd be hungover back on the bus to go back to work, you know, on the Sunday afternoon. It was just a dark sort of end, or not end, like a dark sort of hole we sort of fell into until I started playing football down there.
Right, yep.
So I played for Uni Mowbray while I was down there. It was the last year I was in Launceston, I played for Uni Mowbray.
Yep.
And met some great guys all around my age. They're all uni students. Yep.
So did you have much of a social network prior to that, or was your social network back here?
It was back here.
Was that sort of contributed to the whole year?
It was my fault. Yeah, I think so. It was because, you know, and it was my fault. So we were still at that age. You know, I mean, as you get older, you sort of, you don't grow apart from your friends, but you probably don't see each other as much.
Yeah.
Back at that age, you know what I mean, you're still catching up with your mates all the time and things like that through the week, and, you know, you've got no kids, barely any obligations, so you're still catching up with your mates. All my mates were catching up back in Burnie.
Yep.
And I was in Launceston. I had my best mate with me. He was cool, but that was good. But the rest of them were all still, you know, catching up during the week and playing, you know, whether it be weekly roster basketball or, you know, things like that. They were going to footy training, cricket training together. And I was missing all of that.
You're a bit removed.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, I guess I wouldn't say I was depressed. Like, I don't think I was in depression, but I was definitely, wasn't me. I definitely wasn't me anymore.
Yep. And, so how were you acting at the time that was a bit out of character, would you say?
I was probably pretty short with mum a lot of the time. Obviously, while I was teaching swimming and that sort of stuff, I wasn't earning much money. It didn't pay that well. So I was getting money off her to sort of survive when I was drinking pissing the rest of the money away, basically. Never got into drugs. Never did drugs. So I'm glad about that.
Yep.
Because that probably would have taken it to the next step, wouldn't it? Yeah.
Yep.
Pissing like the wall and things like that. So I guess, you know, I was never happy with where I was at. So I wouldn't say I took it out on mum, but I was definitely probably wasn't the best son throughout those years.
Yeah, righto.
But yeah, not for all of it, but there was definitely times there where, yeah, I'd like to forget. But I suppose I'm glad I went through it, because I don't think I'd be the same if I come out the other side, if I didn't go through that.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So, yeah.
Everything's a lesson, isn't it?
It is. It's a lesson from everything, mate. Like, you really do.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Yeah, the good and the bad. And again, that's the advice I give to my kids as well, even the shit times. Like, you've just got to say, well, why is this happening? Obviously, you can learn something from this. It's not, you know, the sun will come up tomorrow, but, you know, you can take a lesson out of even the shittest thing.
That's right.
To
yeah.
You. Yeah. Mm. One, to make sure it doesn't happen again, or, you know, if you caused it, well, what did I do that led into that?
Exactly. And know your mistakes too.
Yeah.
Know what you've done wrong and realize and change something about it.
Yeah.
It's learning. It's all learning. Yeah. Yeah. Learning from your mistakes and knowing that you're the one that caused it. Yeah. So, yeah.
So what did you do when you came back here? Is that when you got into your mining, was it?
Yeah, I moved back because our lease had ran out. The guy that I was living with at the time, he was moving back to Burnie anyway.
Yep.
So I decided, yeah, okay, I might shoot back to Burnie. I got a job at Timberland. One of my mates wanted me to come play footy at their club, and he got me a job as well. So that was, sweet, nice. I worked there for about a year at Timberland. That was actually a pretty good job. Another sale. It was, I'll say, more of a customer service role. So that was pretty good. And then Dad rang up one day and said, if you get your license, I can help you get a job in mining. Wow. I had no idea about what mining was. I didn't know if you could earn good money there or what.
Yep.
Back then, I didn't know.
Yep.
He said, look, it's a really good job. Then he told me, like, you'll earn this much money. I went, oh. Fuck, right.
Good incentive to get a license.
Let's get the license. Yeah. So I got the license, and then, eventually, he got me an interview. He said he didn't get me a job. He got me the interview. And I got the interview, and then I think they realised who I was, and I was Dad's son, and I got the job. So, yeah. I might have got, like, I think with a lot of jobs nowadays, or back then at least, it was who you knew, not what you knew.
Yeah.
So I was very, very lucky.
Yep.
So I got a job down at Savage River.
Yep.
As a truck driver, I was down there for 2.5 years.
Yep.
Met lifelong mates.
In the world today, mental health is an issue which thankfully more and more people are becoming aware of and comfortable speaking about. When choosing a professional to help you, what kind of service would you be looking for? At Lonvara, when asked to describe Mel Purcell's service, clients described it as real, compassionate, empowering, friendly, welcoming, inner strength building, a positive, safe, supportive environment, and she was described by one source as an absolute legend who enables change with love. Mel offers clinical counselling, hypnotherapy, and a professional service which is tailored to the individual. She has a personal approach and makes sure each client's experience is authentic to their needs while also ensuring full confidentiality. Winner of the 2022 Australian Allied Health Awards for Rural and Remote Excellence, you can self-refer or through your GP mental health care plan. Lonvara, believing in you. Just tell me a little bit about your time down in Savage River then. So you were driving trucks. Is it a pretty full-on sort of gig, is it? Or is it pretty easy? Or?
Oh, I mean, when you first get into it, yeah, it's full-on. Yep. You drive, like, it's big boys playing in real big toys.
Yeah.
You know, these things are massive. It's like sitting on the toilet driving a house.
Yep.
Yeah? if you've never been down there before, you're like, shit,
yeah.
Am I going to be driving one of those? And I looked at this 777 go past. And then the supervisor said, no, you're going to be driving one of those. And it was a 789 went past, and they're like twice the size nearly. So I was like, oh, what?
Yeah.
I've barely been driving a car a year.
Yeah, that's right.
And now I'm going to be driving this thing around. But they're actually way easier than a car to drive.
Yep.
They are. But there's no vision in it. You've got hardly any vision in them. The hardest part of the job is staying awake.
Yep.
Yeah. I actually learned that apples are really good.
Yep.
Yeah, eat an apple and it'll give you a good half an hour, an hour. So, yeah.
Perk you up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was driving a truck there one night and I swore I saw a prehistoric lizard up on the on the windrow, but all it was a crack in the windrow which made the tail, and it just sort of, my mind just said that was there.
Yeah.
So you hallucinate. You don't realise you're tired.
Yep.
You see things hopping around in front of you, then they stop. It's like, oh no, that was just the puddle. It's like, it's really scary.
Yep.
See, the problem is when you're at that depth of tiredness, you don't know that you're tired.
Yeah.
You don't realise it's happening.
Yep.
Until you wake up and go, oh.
Yeah.
So.
And during that time, though, obviously you were coming and going. It was probably a good thing that you were coming back from time to time because you met your wife.
I did, yeah.
How did that come about?
Funnily enough, I went and got it. I was downtown. I got a tattoo on my leg.
Yep.
And I had to go and get some cream for the tattoo. And as I was walking back to my car, my auntie ran out of a jeweler store and said, oh, hey, come in and meet the people I work with. And so I went, all right, no worries. And I met this lady, this girl, I suppose she was. And that was it. They, you know, she said she actually lives over the back fence of your mum's house, where I was living at mum's house.
Yeah. Small world.
Yeah, it is.
That's Tassie.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. She goes, and Auntie Joan said, oh, you know, Meg's just bought a house over the back of mum's house. Oh, yeah, nice. Thinking that she'd bought it with her husband or whatever. She was an apprentice.
Yep.
So she was an apprentice. And then I found out a couple of days later that she was single and she was buying the house by herself as an apprentice, which I thought right then and there, I was pretty impressed by that. Like, she would have been on a quarter of my wage and she was buying a house and I was on really good money back in the time.
Yep.
And had nothing. Yep. Living with mum, you know.
And anyway, so you're still just blowing all your wage, yep, were you, on grog?
Still blowing. Yeah. Yep. Week in, week out, like, you know, you come home and just piss for 2 days, a day of recovery, and then back to work. I was still doing it, like, yeah.
Yep.
And then, Marnie just sort of set us up to meet, and we did, and yeah, that was it. Like, funnily enough, Meg kept up with me with cocktails all that night. We drank cocktails all that night.
That's impressive.
And she kept up with me. And since then, I don't think I've ever seen a drunk. So it's we're complete opposites, but it just seems to work.
Awesome, yeah. It does. Well, you're still together, and in this day and age, that's an achievement within itself.
It is, I couldn't find anyone in the world that would run my household as well as she does.
Yep.
She's an amazing, amazing woman. So,
yep.
I'm very, very lucky.
Yeah, awesome. Well, she'll be listening, mate. So you get some brownie.
I hope so. Yeah.
So just continuing on with your journey, and one thing that I did want to ask you about, and you mentioned it there before, is after your Savage River, you decided to do the fly-in, fly-out stuff, didn't you? Over to Western Australia. Just tell us firstly how that came about and what you were doing over there.
Basically, I still remember the day I thought I was driving this truck down the road at Savage River, and I thought, what am I doing in this place? There's guys over in Western Australia earning triple the amount of money I'm earning.
So that's the big same pull.
Job. It was only money. It was all money.
Yep.
All money.
Yep.
I had no want to be travelling that far for work. Because we were always going to stay in Tassie.
Yep.
My wife didn't want to move. She said, no, I like it here. So if you're going to do it, you're going to have to fly in and out from here. And so, well, I thought, I did some sums. And I thought, I'm still going to be way better off if I do it. I finally found a place that'd take me. My biggest problem was my weight.
Right.
Yeah, the seats in the trucks, they're only rated to 110 kilos or something like that.
Yep.
And they don't take contractors on that are over 120, which I found out's garbage because there's heaps of guys up there heavier than me. Anyway, I digress.
Yep.
They took me on, and so I'd been working there for 3 weeks. We were mine was operated by a contracting company called HWE. What I didn't realise at the time, it was owned by BHP. And 3 weeks later, BHP came in and said, we're taking over. And I thought, oh no, there goes my job. I'm out of a job, rah, rah. And they said, but we're taking all the workers with us.
Right.
Yep. And we got a pay rise straight away. So within 3 weeks of being there, I had 12 different shirts. So.
Yep.
And I stayed there for 8 years.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. So just, you don't have to go into numbers, but you said obviously money was the pull, and I've always been fascinated why people do it. Can you give us a percentage on how much more money you were earning doing that rather than working in the mines here?
Yeah, absolutely. So when I left Savage River, I was on about 65,000.
Yep.
Which was, it must have been back in about 2010.
Yep.
I think. And then when I went up to, by the time I left Western Australia, I was on 160. So I was $100,000 difference.
Bloody hell, yeah. And then, you know, with inflation and what they're being paid these days.
Yeah, that's right. It'd be more now. Way more now.
Yeah.
And see, and for the last 5 years that I was in Western Australia, we didn't get a pay rise. We'd signed an agreement, our EA agreement, was that we thought that it was strong enough for us for 5 years.
So yeah, right.
We didn't get a pay rise. So I was on that for 5 years, which was. Well, I shouldn't say I was there full time for 8 years. So for the last 2.5, 3 years, I went back to job share. So I was 2 weeks on, 4 weeks off.
Yep.
Fantastic.
Yep.
Life work balance, but still 3,000 kilometres away.
Yeah.
So yeah.
But your wage decreases a little bit.
Yeah, sorry. So it was basically half the work for half the money.
Yep. One thing I was going to ask you about that, and obviously it is so common these days for people that have, like, either partner, whether or not it's the husband or the wife, fly in, fly out. There's so high rate of separation and mental health and stuff like that. So I was going to ask you, what are the challenges that you saw in that fly in, fly out? And the next part of that question was, did you guys sort of put anything in place? How did you manage to get through it? Did you have strategies at all?
There was a couple. So, yeah, I actually saw a lot of this, like a lot of breakups up there, whether it be the man working away or the husband working away and finding someone on site.
Yep. Because you're spending more of your life there than you are at home.
Yeah,
aren't you?
Yeah. That's right. It's basically, you're a family up there as well.
Yep.
Or, you know, someone at home finding someone that was there more often. And to be honest, I can't. It was something that was never even a factor in my mind. It was never going to happen to me. It was never going to, and as far as I know, it never happened to Meg down here.
Yep.
It was never on the radar. But I can understand why some people did it. Like, they'd have an argument with their wife down home the day before flying back, they'd fly up to work, and then you've got 2 weeks where you can't sort that. You can't really sort that problem out unless it's over the phone.
Yeah.
Another thing that I've especially a lot of fathers had this problem, was every time they got back to Perth, they were having to growl at the kids for something they'd done while he was away.
Right.
So one of the things I said to my wife, I said, whatever you do, don't say to the kids, wait till your father gets home, because when I come home, I don't want to deal with that sort of thing. So, and that was a decision made on. There was a couple of incidents where, like, it just their dads were like they were going into depression basically, because they knew they were going to have to go home and grow out the kids because they'd done something the day before, or a couple of days before.
Yep.
Sort of thing.
So their first interaction with first dad interaction after seeing was, him for so long is...
Shit, dad's about to growl at me because I did that 2 weeks, or 2 days ago, or a week ago, sort of thing.
So rather than being a joyous occasion, it was...
Yeah. So we wanted to make it always joyous, and so Meg would always come and pick me up from the airport, and she'd be waiting in the airport, and we'd make it, like, you know, no matter how tired I was or how much she couldn't be bothered to come to pick me up, her and Alfie would come, and we would, you know, have a big, bit of a celebration sort of thing, so... Yep. It was a joyous occasion to come back. And I suppose, and we spoke about doing that. That wasn't just what happened. We spoke about doing that to make sure that it was exciting for me to come home and I wanted to come home and things like that.
And so. that obviously takes a lot of mental strength and commitment on her behalf as well.
Yeah,
because
absolutely.
She might have had a shit bloody 4 weeks or whatever you were away.
Yep. While I'm away.
And all she wants to do is just throw you this child.
Yeah. And so, and another thing that happened as well is what I'd forget, and this happened, I forgot a lot of the times, I'd come home, Mick had a routine. And I'd come home and I'd break that routine because...
You were the fly in the ointment.
Yeah, that was it. I was the one that was, you know, like you said, fly in the ointment, cat amongst the pigeons.
Yeah.
And she had said to me one day, she said, look, you can't come in and do this. I've got a routine. This is how I do things.
Yep.
You need to either conform to what I'm doing.
Yep.
And rightly so. Like, she's right. Or we need to compromise where we can do something when you're at home, but we've both got to agree on it. And in the end, I thought, well, you're probably right. I'll just come in and just do as I'm supposed to. Like, yeah. Which is fair enough, too.
Yep.
Because I'm away, and well, we only had one child while I was away. But she's doing all the work. That's a 24-hour job, parenting. Right? Me, I was a 12.5-hour job a day, then I got 12.5 hours off.
Yeah.
Right? Yep. Whereas she's a 24-hour job, parenting. So I always said, you're working harder, so I'll conform.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
No, and I didn't, and it wasn't that big a deal. It was just, you know,
yep.
Help out when you're home. You don't have to do everything, but yeah, yep. Do some stuff.
Right? So you'd come in and just sort of start trying to do stuff how you wanted to do it.
Was a bit of that, but I'm a pretty messy sort of guy. Like,
yep.
I take my clothes off and they're on the floor, and I might pick them up that day yep. or the next day. Meg's very clean, very, very tidy, and. Yep. That was one of the things that just wasn't flying.
Yeah.
Yeah, fair enough. So, yeah.
Yeah. It's funny, though. I think I read in a book, too, because it was saying that that is the cause of a lot of these relationship breakdowns. And you know, not blaming either side of the party, but even for the man, you've been up there in your own routine for yep. 4 weeks or 2 weeks or whatever your swing is, and then you come back and suddenly you're dumped with all this house stuff,
yep.
whereas you need time to suddenly to wean yourself off the mine mm-hmm. site and back into the house. So
yeah.
It was saying that... I don't know, depending on the guy, it might take 1 or 2 days or something. You've just got to let me be for a couple of
absolutely,
days.
Absolutely,
but
yeah.
You were just straight into it, were you? That worked for you?
Well, I mean, I was never... I'm not like the work around the house sort of guy. Like, I'm not very handy with, like, tools and things like that. So there was never, like, big jobs I do, apart from mowing the lawns, a bit of gardening and things like that.
Yep.
And I've got to admit, Meg was pretty good. She was pretty relaxed with me, like, coming home for a couple of days and doing it.
Yep.
It was probably more me being the problem when I came home,
yep.
messing her routine.
Yep.
She was pretty quick on not drilling me with jobs or nagging me to do things as yep. soon as I got home. She was pretty good with that.
Which, so. Like I said, as I've read a lot, aren't aware of that.
And, no, you know, they're
and,
not.
And,
yeah.
And no offence to them, they're not sure. It's like, oh, beauty, this other set of hands.
Yeah,
so as soon as
yeah.
Dad walks through the door, oh, can you make sure you drop the kids off tomorrow and all this? Well, Dad's been used to just, you know, going to the cafeteria and
that's
having breakfast
right.
of a morning, going to work, and
yeah.
that's it.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So they don't realise that it's also a bit of a shock to Dad's system when he comes home.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to be doing everything, but I agree that he should help out still,
yeah.
like, as well. So, yeah. It's about finding that compromise, really,
yeah.
more than anything, just that compromise.
Yeah. yeah, well, like anything, like, you know, a couple of the big keywords, I suppose, in any relationship are, as you say, compromise. There's got to be a little bit of give and take, and also communication.
Yeah.
You know, if she hadn't have communicated to you, well, Nathan, when you're coming home, it's like another child, like, you know.
That's right.
You've got to...
We probably would have ended.
Yeah.
She probably would have left me.
Yeah.
So...
Whereas some might just bottle it up and bottle it up because they don't want to, you know, create an argument.
Yeah.
Yeah, you've got to be... I suppose you've got to be brave enough to, well,
yeah.
for the sake of the relationship, to have that conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. If it's beginning to happen... Talk about it straight away.
Yeah.
That's like, and that was the best thing about, I think that was the best thing about Meg and I. We were never afraid to just speak about things.
Yeah.
And we do, and we still do now.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's later than others.
Yeah.
But we still do talk about it, and when we do, we know it's having that conversation.
Yeah.
It's sit down and full attention.
Yeah.
And we've got to listen to each other as well.
Yeah.
No matter how much it hurts you to hear you're doing the wrong thing.
Yep.
You just got to take. You got to wear it, and
yeah.
then you'll realize. You know you've done it.
Yeah,
and you'll know you're doing the wrong thing, and you'll change it.
Yep. So many different rabbit holes we can jump down with you, but you've had a couple of different businesses along the line too.
Yep.
So while you were over in WA, you actually started up your own t-shirt company.
I did.
What made you decide to do that?
Oh, it was just. I guess I wanted more out of life. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Right.
But I was, you know, I was operating a different couple of machines while I was up there, and you know, you have a lot of time to think while you're in one. You know, you're in it for 12 and a half hours a day. You're only out for half an hour smoker, half an hour break. So the rest of the time you're in that cab by yourself, you've got a lot of time to think and
yep.
thought up many a business ideas and things like that. And as I always do, I take the easiest one. And it was getting some t-shirts printed. So
yep.
started up a brand called Instinct Athletic. And I had hopes of it becoming a sports brand. This was before children as well. So.
Yep.
Got some t-shirts printed, sold them far too cheap, because then I realised that, oh shit, everyone I know has got a t-shirt now, and I've only charged them $20 for it. It cost me about 18.
Yeah,
so it's like, you know,
they're
I mean?
Only going to need one.
Yeah, they're not going to buy more. So
yeah.
That was a big mistake, but hey, you know, you live and you learn.
Yep.
And I went into hoodies and made a little bit of money off hoodies. And it was a really, really enjoyable thing because, okay, fair enough, I was trying to start a sports brand, but what I was actually doing is, and what I didn't realize is, I was doing internet marketing.
Yep.
Because I had, you know, you could have the best t-shirts and the best hoodies and the best everything in the world.
Yep.
If no one knows you got it, no one's fucking buying it.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So I thought, righto, I'll make a bit of noise online.
Yep. So this is our next segue.
This is how the character, the Baron, come about. So quick backstory. On the Baron. How that come about was, I was cold at work one night in the Pilbara because it used to get freezing in the winter up there.
Yep.
And I didn't have a beanie. And being bald, you want something on your head.
Yeah.
And I got a hat off my supervisor. Here, have one of these. It was brand new. And I put it on. It was like an old pilot's hat. Like, yep. You know, the old pilot sort of hat.
Yeah, yep. And, like the kamikaze
pilot. Yeah, the kamikaze pilot hat. Yeah. That's exactly right. Yeah. And we had a bit of a joke. Oh, you know, like kamikaze pilots. Oh, yeah, sweet. And somehow, I don't know how, but I acquired these welding goggles, like actual goggles. And I sat them over my head and, you know, to portray that kamikaze pilot.
Yeah.
And everyone started calling me the Red Baron because, yep, I think he was a character,
yeah,
in comics years ago. Yeah. Yeah. And then the Baron was sort of born. And back then, this was before TikTok as well. So I still claim now that I'm a pioneer of that. because on Snapchat, you could play music. Not Snapchat. Snapchat.
Yep.
You could play music and video over the top of it. And I'd always do is pull the goggles down and just mime to the song. And I created this character called the Baron that was mute. And the only way he could talk to people was through song.
Yep.
And so what I did was I incorporated him into my videos about Instinct Athletic. And so what I'd do is I created this guy called the Baron, who was a bit of a nasty character. He'd come in, he'd steal a t-shirt, put it on, I'd go, where'd you get that from?
Mm.
And he'd sing back to me, and that's how I marketed the brand.
Yep.
And a few of my mates sort of said, what are you doing, man? Like, you know, fitness is a serious industry, rah-rah-rah. You shouldn't be playing around while you're trying to start a business. I said, well, every time I post a video, I sell 10 or 15, 20 t-shirts. Like, yep, it's getting the brand out there. I'm not that attached to it. It's okay. Yep. Like, if it fails, it fails, but it seems to go all right. And so I kept doing that and doing that and doing that. And then, then I had kids. So yep, we sort of stopped it. But Instinct Athletic taught me a lot about a business. It was... Yeah.
Yeah. So besides obviously not selling your t-shirts for enough money, were there any other lessons that you learned early days, like as an entrepreneur?
Oh, I think that was obviously the biggest one.
Yep.
The biggest one. But I think because early on I wasn't selling many at all.
Yep.
Because I wasn't marketing and I wasn't doing it. So I learned very quickly that you've got to have an online presence,
yep,
nowadays.
Yep.
Because that's where people are looking.
Yeah.
So you want to make a noise in places people are looking.
Yep.
There's no point putting ads in the paper if you're not putting ads on social media, because there's far more people looking on social media than, absolutely, there is in the paper.
Yeah, it's a beast.
Yeah, it is. It's a real beast, yeah, but it's very hard. It's very fickle and very, very hard.
Mm.
So, yeah.
Yep. Were you nervous sort of starting up the business?
Not one bit.
Yep.
I don't know why.
Yep.
I suppose I had disposable funds.
Yep.
I had money that I could spend because I was earning a lot of money, so it was okay to do that. I guess I almost forgot the value of a dollar while I was working. That was one downfall of mine, and I forgot the value of a dollar, and I've had to learn that very quickly again. But so I guess it was, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. I've blown a few grand.
Yeah. So there was no fear of failure or anything?
No, because I didn't think I was going to fail.
Yeah.
I had no, didn't think I was going to fail.
Yeah.
I guess I kind of did in the end, because I not lost interest, but my interest turned. So I had a son. He had an emergency early on.
Yep.
Where I had to fly from work back to Melbourne and meet him in the airport, meet him at the hospital and things like that. We were there for 8 weeks, and I basically lost all interest in
yep,
Instinct Athletic. I had a priority, mate. Like, you know,
yep,
I always said I always put the kids first, and I firmly believe that, and I did that.
Yep.
He's fine. He was okay in the end, but it sort of lost a bit of interest. So I thought, well, it's just sitting in the shed. I'll start it back up one day.
Yep.
And then a guy who was actually probably my best customer, I went to school with him. rang me up one day and said, "What are you doing with that? And would you consider selling it?" And I said, "Yeah, I would. I'd consider selling it."
Yep.
I sold it to him for a great price for him. Like, it was a loss for me, but I still got back a bit of money, sort of thing, yep, for something that was just sitting in the shed.
Yep.
But it was a good brand, a really good stepping stone into the business world for me.
Yeah.
And yeah, I definitely don't regret doing it. I'm glad I did it.
Yeah.
So glad I did it.
Yeah. And it's interesting, you know, just talking about your personality, and, you know, it's almost like a superpower that you didn't think that you'd fail, to have that confidence, yeah, and two, it didn't worry you if you did, because I don't know whether I read somewhere, but they were saying about, you know, why people don't go into business, and there's a certain percentage of people that it's not even the money, it's more about what will people think if it fails, or what if they don't come. And I can actually relate to that, because this podcast was probably 2 or 3 years later than I wanted to do it, because, yeah, I thought, well, what if I put something out there and people say it's stupid, or, and they might anyway.
Yeah.
But, you know, but what if nobody listens? You know, that was my thing. Like, not that, you know, this, it costs a lot of money to do it, but I can relate to that, because I was more about the mental side of it, of, you know, what if people think it's a stupid idea or something like that. Like,
yeah.
But yeah, and it was, as I say, I read somewhere that there is a fair percentage of people that's why they don't go into business. They don't care about losing money. It's more about their reputation. And how it looks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, if I was someone that worried about reputation, I wouldn't be where I am today, for starters.
You're in your sweet spot.
Like, but I mean, my advice to those people, right, especially if they're going to start a podcast, if no one listens to it, then no one's going to think anything of,
yep,
it. You know, you're better off to have a try.
Yeah.
And it could turn out to be something amazing.
Yeah.
And you'll never regret doing it.
Yeah.
You'll never regret trying.
Yep.
You'll get there and go, "Oh, I tried, I failed." Ah, oh, well, who cares? Like, yeah, people aren't going to slag on you. People aren't going to jump on you for having a go. And, yep, if they do, they're the ones that you probably don't want to surround yourself anyway.
That's right. Yeah. So, and it's funny you said there before that, you know, you kind of failed with your t-shirt business, but, yeah, you didn't, because you had a go, didn't,
no,
you?
That's right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, it never got me anywhere, not even close to where I thought it was going to get me. Like, yeah, I thought I was going to be a billionaire. Like, you know, I mean, yeah, I didn't, but, like, you know, I thought I was going to go really, really well and all this sort of stuff. And because I was, you know, I was trying to keep everything that I thought about was positive, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I went in and tried it. And so, yeah, I didn't get to where I wanted to be. But geez, I learned some lessons, like a lot, like, yeah, yeah.
It's like we were saying before, everything's a lesson.
It is.
If you make a mistake, it's still,
yeah,
a lesson.
Yeah, exactly, yeah, yeah.
This episode of the pod wouldn't be possible without the support of Alex, Sammy and the team at Shearwater Health and Fitness. Everyone needs a little bit of help and support at times, especially when it comes to health and wellness. Not only is Shearwater Health and Fitness supporting the Talk Hard podcast, but more importantly, they're committed to providing Shearwater and the surrounding community with a premium quality health and wellness facility. If you've been looking to take the first step or even the next step in your health and wellness journey, they provide a full-class timetable, 24/7 gym, infrared sauna, Normatec recovery boots and a massage therapist. Something for everyone, whether you're a high-performance athlete, mum, dad or just someone wanting to help be the best version of yourself. Call in and see them at 24 Shearwater Boulevard, which is right next door to the IGA, or you can check them out on Instagram and Facebook for all the details. You touched on it there before, that you had to fly to Melbourne there because of your a medical episode that your son had. Are you able to tell us what happened?
Like, yeah. So he was fresh. He was 4 weeks old.
Yeah.
So I'd seen him for 2 weeks. I'd seen him for 3 weeks, and then I'd been away for the week.
Yep.
Back at work, and I was just starting night shift, and my wife. It wasn't a surprise. He was in hospital for a few days in Launceston prior to that. And Meg said, "We might have to fly to Launceston." So I fly to Melbourne. And I said, "All right, well, just ring me if we do." And anyway, I was on night shift and I was asleep. And then I got the phone call, said, "Look, can you get to Melbourne as soon as you can?" Problem was, the flight from Launceston could only take him. Meg had to get another flight. So we all flew to, Jesus, Melbourne,
yep,
on three different flights. I was flying from Perth.
Yep.
She was flying from Launceston on a commercial, on a normal flight. And he was on a private sort of plane.
Yeah.
Thankfully, I got there first. Work were fantastic. My supervisor at the time, Chris, he was fantastic. I rang him up. He was in bed asleep because it was on night shift.
Yeah.
I said, "Look, this is what's happened." He goes, "Yep, no worries. I'll get you on the next flight I can." He rang back 5 minutes later and said, "Get your stuff. There'll be someone there to pick you up in half an hour. We'll take you to the airport and you're out."
Wow.
Yeah. So he was brilliant, yep, right? So he got
and
me.
And you
to
remember stuff like that?
Yeah, I do, mate. Yeah. I'll never, ever forget that.
Yeah.
So he got me to Perth, and then I had to get my way from Perth to Melbourne. And I got to Melbourne first, which was good. my wife had booked accommodation and that for us right next to the Royal Children's Hospital, which is also great. I got there first, and then they wheeled him in, and obviously I was emotional because I'd know this child was there, and I'd known him for 3 weeks, and so I didn't know him that well, and I didn't really know what was going on. And he had a condition called laryngomalacia, where he had a floppy larynx.
Right.
So he couldn't breathe while he was feeding.
Right.
So he'd feed for a bit, and then he'd have to stop, and it was frustrating for Meg because he wouldn't latch on. So he was fully bottle feeding in the end anyway.
Yeah.
So it was frustrating for her, and it was pretty tough. And he ended up having two operations. And the second one, when they went in, the anaesthetist said, "Look, this is a dangerous one. He might not come out of this."
Yep.
And we didn't realise the severity of it until he told us that, and Alfie was on the table about to go in. So that was pretty scary. But he did. He came out, and he's great, and it was good. And everything's fine there. But yeah, that was where I sort of lost interest in the Instinct Athletic, so that's where sort of we left at that. But yeah.
And you said you had a priority change. Did you, like, emotionally, did you feel that shift when you became a parent of going away? Was it a lot harder to go away after becoming a parent, and you felt that played on your mind while you're away more than it would have done before?
Yeah, it did. So from the second I picked him up, and I told him, you know, you're now my priority and that sort of stuff, that was when he was first born.
Yeah.
I almost developed, I won't say a fear, but I got anxiety from flying in and out. And that was a big contributor to sort of coming home. Because with the fact that I had kids, and I got anxiety that I was going to be away from them for 2 weeks, or a child, I'm going to be away from him for 2 weeks. And I hated that. And then it started to become toxic at work. I hated everything at work, and I was blaming work for it. It wasn't work's fault. It was my fault for keeping on doing it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I still did that for... And that's when I sort of dropped back to that half roster, that job share roster. I made that decision to do that.
Yep, for the family.
For the family. And that was really, really good. It was really, really good. And it gave me opportunity to open my next... business, if you wanted to go into that
absolutely. Yep.
Which was the Strength Den in Burnie.
Yep.
So I opened that with two mates, Nick and Ryan. Thankfully, I had them because it wouldn't have got done if it wasn't for them. Because those two are absolute workhorses.
Yep. So you all complement each other well?
They're the workhorses, and I'm the guy that sort of just pulls them back a little bit to say, hey, hang on a minute, we can't spend all that. haven't got enough.
Yep. So, Howard, can I ask you, you were talking there before about, and I'd assume you had the same thoughts going into this, that it was going to be successful and it wasn't going to fail. Did they have the same mindset as you going into a new business?
And it's funny, I guess when you know, or when you think you know, I suppose. It was we had really high hopes, and really, we were really excited about it. It was all positive thoughts.
Yep.
I used a lot of things that I'd learnt from Instinct in like learning how to market it and things like that. Yep. So I had that backing, so that was sort of my job, was to, I had to bring people in.
Yep.
And their jobs were to Ryan had worked in a gym before, so his job was to do all the policies, all the layout of the gym and things like that. And Nick was a workhorse, and he'd been a manager previously, so his job was, I also had to bring in the gear as well. I had to buy the gear, purchase the gear, because I'd done that with Instinct as well. And Nick's was the maintenance of all the equipment and things like that, and basically the fit out, building the fit out, quoting the fit out, and that was his job. So we all had our own jobs, and we didn't step on each other's toes. It was, you know, that we had setbacks, and we had a lot of delays on equipment and things like that, but for the most part, we really kept each other going. It was really good.
Yeah,
really good. But without those two, the work wouldn't have got done. I would never have got done.
Well, like I say, you all complimented each other.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
How, like, obviously being... Had they owned businesses before? Or
no.
Yeah?
No.
Did you have, like, a business strategy as far as, you know, how regularly you guys would meet and how you supported each other or anything like that?
Nah.
Yep.
That's probably... And I think they'll agree. We probably should have... I mean, we had meetings and things like that, but there was never any strategy. It was more like just chewing the fat and talking about how great it was going to be, to be honest.
Yep. Which has a place too, though. Isn't
it does. Positive? It does. And I suppose we did talk about things that were going to come up and how we can combat it. So I suppose there were meetings as such, but A lot of it was just talking.
Yeah. What about challenges of opening a business?
Well, we were going in to compete with Zap because they were a 24-hour gym. So we were going to be a 24-hour gym as well. That was our competitive market. But we were powerlifting. Like those two guys are powerlifters. So that was our difference in it because it wasn't really on offer in the area on the scale that we wanted it to be.
Yep.
So
you had a niche market.
It was a niche market, yeah. But we really wanted to have a bodybuilding gym as well, like with lots of equipment, and we wanted lots and lots of equipment is what we wanted, because most of the gyms there, they have equipment and it was good, but a lot of the time people were waiting for things and we didn't want that to happen at TSD. So we sort of we went overboard with the gear and filled the you know, 1,000 square meters of gym floor full of equipment, and we've only grown since then. So. Yeah.
Any major challenges, though, when you first started up?
Oh, yeah.
What was the hardest thing?
Council.
Yep.
100% council.
Yep.
Yeah, worst thing to deal with. Like, don't even want to do it. If I had to do it again, I'd pay someone else to deal with it for me.
Yep.
It was a headache, mate. Like, just regulations and... Well, and I didn't even have to deal with most of it. Nick did it all. Nick did all the... Because it was all, you know, for fit-out, for building offices and toilets and things like that. So he did most of it, but geez, it was a hassle. It was weeks and weeks of waiting.
There's gyms everywhere now. Like, why do you think it's taken off so much?
I think outside looking in, from the outside looking in the gym, you think, oh, beauty, just get a warehouse, fill it with gear and people will come.
Yep.
That's nowhere near. Like, there's so much more work you got to do. You've got maintenance on the equipment. You got to think about, you know, oh, there's like... So many costs weekly. So you got like cleaning products, toilet products. You have clean bathrooms. You've got cleaners. You got there's constant maintenance. Things are always getting broken. People are dropping plates. They're putting holes in walls, and you got to fix those.
Yep.
There's so much maintenance, and then you've got to be there for people when they have issues. Like, oh, you know, I need to pause my membership. Okay, you can't do all this stuff over the phone all the time. You've got to have someone there.
Yeah.
People want that personal touch still, I think, and. I think from the outside looking in, you forget all that has to happen.
Yep.
And we thought that would be how it'd be too. Like, we thought, okay, yeah, we'll just get this big warehouse, we'll chuck some gear in, and like, we'll have good gear, and, you know, people will come.
Yeah.
It's not like that at all.
Yeah.
It's work. Mm. It is work, yeah.
Yeah, they still want that personal touch, like you say.
Yeah.
What advice would you give to anyone that's looking to start up a business? Like, what do you reckon's the gold nugget that you've learned through your time in businesses? If you give them one piece of advice, what would it be?
It's cliche, but just do it. Just start it. Yep. Just like have a go.
Yep.
You know, take the steps. At least research it, you know, and then put something in place. Or, you know, try and get a job in that industry.
Yep.
And see what it's like. I think most people that are going to start a business probably are already in that industry some way, shape or form. Not all people, don't get me wrong. But I think most people would be. So if you're already doing it, let's say it's an accountant business, something like that, you're already doing it, just go and do it.
Yeah.
Just go and do it.
Yeah.
Start it from home if you have to.
Yeah.
And get a couple of clients on the side so you can keep your day-to-day grind, and you can do a little side hustle thing and then do it that way. But you've just got to, if you don't take that first step, you'll never do it. You'll never have a business. You've got to take the first step sometime.
Yeah.
Why wait?
Yeah.
You don't have to know everything. When you start, you don't have to be great to start, but you have to start to be great.
It's a good quote.
That's one of my. That was what started Instinct Athletic.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have to be great at it. Just got to try it.
Yeah. Got to start somewhere.
We were lucky. We just went for it.
Yep.
And people loved it from what we knew.
Yep.
Other people probably didn't like it, but then we were never told about that. Yep. We only, like, for the first year at least, we only really got good feedback, great feedback, in fact. Yep. So we just kept doing what we were doing.
Yeah.
Whether or not that's because all three of us were big and had beards and people didn't want to tell us bad things, I don't know. I don't know. Yep. But it seemed to be good. We've kept a really good level of members from between, I think it was, our memberships have been between 500 and 600 for probably the last 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we're at. So, you know, whilst we're not really growing, the thing is with gyms, it's sort of like, it's a lot of people, it's a fad. Do you know what I mean? So they'll come in for 6-12 months, then they'll get out of it.
Yeah.
And then, but then the next people are coming in for 6-12 months. So you've got to make sure you've got to stay current so you can get those new people in because you know that people are eventually going to drop off.
Yeah.
And then you've got those diehards that have been there for 5 years and they're still there 5 days a week.
Just part of their life.
That is their life, you know?
Yeah.
And we love them.
Yep.
We love them because they buy into the community, mate.
Yep.
We tried to make... We always wanted to make a community at TSD. So it wasn't just come here and train and see you later.
Yep.
It's come here, train, have a chat, join the team. Like, it doesn't cost you anything extra to do it apart from your time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You know, so you get your membership and then you can come in and be a part of the culture. Come to our competitions. Can help out if you want to or compete in them.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That's what we wanted, competitors. People that compete are the ones that train, the ones that get coaching, and they're the ones that stay. That's what we want. We want competitors.
Yeah.
So when we started, there was about, I don't reckon there was any more than 10, maybe 15 competing powerlifters in Burnie.
Yeah.
Like, now there's hundreds. So, and that's, we feel like that's on our back. We've done that. There's a few from other gyms, don't get me wrong. But I think a lot of it comes from the things and the promotion that we made through powerlifting.
Yeah. So, and one big thing that you touched on there before is, you know, promoting that, you know, come in and be part of the team and part of the culture and that. I still believe that one of the main core things for any human being is to belong somewhere.
Yeah.
And to be, feel part of a community. Yep. So that's why so many people get into, you touched on it there before about, you know, your sporting clubs and things like that. That's why it is so important to be involved in that. And you do find now with gyms, they do become like part of the fabric of the place, don't they? It's not just like you say, come in and, you know, do a few curls and go home. You know, you develop your relationships and that's where you, you know, you become part of the team. You train together and you compete together. Like, I think that's something that's been really, really good.
That's right.
The other thing I was going to ask you was, and I blame everything on social media because it's such a big thing these days, but do you think that's played its part in gyms really taking off now because people are so visual to others now? They're always putting pictures of themselves on the internet so they want to look good, and then I suppose it's grown into its own beast. They see other people that are at the gym and they're starting to lose weight and they're starting to look good. Well, okay, well, that motivates them to do it. Do you feel that this time that we're in right now is the perfect time to have a gym for that reason?
That's why I did it.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. So pictures, videos, music, it's all motivation for me. Like that was how I got motivated to get into just working out. Mine was never for strength. It was always for body image. I always wanted to look better.
Yep.
I don't now. I mean, I got fit for a time. I was never amazing, like, physique, but, you know, that was why I was doing it. But yeah, but it all stemmed from seeing things on social media. That's how it worked for me. That's what I wanted. So I went and did it. That's what I went and tried to do.
Yep.
I never succeeded because I was never dedicated enough for that sort of stuff. But you're right. I think that one of the biggest drivers of gyms today is social media and fitness athletes, fitness models.
So just around that time, did you move back to Tassie before you started the strength then, or were you still fly in, fly out for a little while then? Or?
I was still. I never left Tassie. I always lived in Tassie.
So sorry. Yeah, that's right. You were working back in Tassie. That's what
no,
I meant.
No, I was working in Western Australia for about, I want to say a year, 18 months. For the first 18 months TSD was open.
Yep.
I was working that 2 weeks on, 4 weeks off roster. And then I guess that anxiety still was growing about flying back and leaving the family and things like that. So in the end, it just got too much for me. So I just said, I'm not doing it anymore. I basically looked for a new job and found one. And then the next day I rang up and handed him a notice.
That's when your second child came into the world, didn't
you? Yeah, Evie. Yeah. She came in.
Can you tell us about that time? Because she's had a few challenges along the journey.
She has, challenges, yes, to speak.
Yeah.
So she was born. It was an emergency cesarean, but it wasn't like a desperate, there was nothing, like I've heard of emergency cesareans and it was just simpler than that. Like there was no stress within the room or anything like that. It was mm-hmm. like, yeah, she's fine. We'll just get her out and be okay.
Yep.
And everything was fine. And then Evie was a tough baby. Like she was really tough. It wasn't like Alfie. Alfie was pretty easy. He'd go to sleep and you'd wake up, you feed him. Whereas Evie didn't sleep. She just cried and cried and cried and cried and cried and cried and cried. And when she wasn't crying, she was crying.
Yeah.
It was like, that was really, really, really hard. So from the outset, we knew something was wrong.
Yep.
And because Alfie had been through that that medical system of when he had his operations, we were still in it. We had a few things where Alfie would go to an early learning school, and we started taking Evie to that as well with him. And then the people at the school noticed as well that there was some things wrong. She wasn't really sitting up when she was at the age where she was been sitting up and things like that. And so they did some things done, and we got the diagnosis that she has cerebral palsy.
Yep.
So
it affects strength, movement.
It does. So Evie is in her hips is where she's really tight, and her hands. She doesn't really move her hands that well. So sitting up is a big issue because she's got no strength in her hips. She's very strong in her legs, but no balance. So we do intense therapies with her. So Meg and Evie go away for 3 weeks at a time to Queensland, 3 or 4 times a year.
Yep.
Where they go up and they do intense therapy, where she does hydrotherapy in the pool and physiotherapy with the physiotherapist as well.
So that's to build her strength and build
her muscles. Just to try and build her strength and trying to get her moving. And like for the first couple they went, I thought, oh yeah, okay, you know, it's good for her. You know, Meg seems to think that it's working. I never saw any changes really. But then I went up for a week, and even her mood changes. She's in a great mood. She's laughing all the time. She's sitting up. She's trying things, and it's just a wonderful experience. So. Yep. We're going to continue that. We're going to keep doing that.
Yeah.
And at the end of this, the last one she just did, she sat for 8.5 minutes unaided. And before that, it was a minute. So that was a big, big improvement for us. And we're really happy with it. So, yeah. And, you know, we just sort of, just got to take every day as it comes. We have hard days where we're both emotional wrecks.
Yeah.
Meg does most of the work. She does a lot of the work.
Yeah. So what would you say would be the main challenges of having a child with cerebral palsy?
Well, I mean, the fact that you don't know what is wrong with her when she's upset. She's non-verbal. She doesn't talk.
Oh, okay.
So she can't tell us what's going on. If she wants to get something, she can't just go over and get it. Someone's got to be with her most of the time. Like we can let her lay down on the floor and play with the toys and things like that, and that's fine. But you can't leave her for too long. So. It sort of means that, you know, Meg can't work. Meg's a jeweler. She absolutely loves her job, and she does 2 days a week. That's all she can do, because the rest of the time Evie's got either appointments or therapies or whatever, and, you know, no one to look after her, and that's just the way it is. So Meg's just got to stay at home, which I think she loves being with Evie. She absolutely loves it, but I think that she would love to go back to work as well.
Yeah.
Because she loves being a jeweler.
Yep.
So that's it. She definitely wears most of the brunt of it.
Yep.
But Evie's genuinely now, she's genuinely happy. Generally happy. It's only when something's bad that it's really, really bad.
Yeah.
Yep. So yeah.
So I'm gonna show my ignorance now. Like what's the long-term goal for her? Like what can she get to? And the other thing that I was gonna ask, and again this might sound like a stupid question, but it will she become verbal? Will she be able to speak to you?
This is all we don't know. We do hope she'll become verbal.
Yep.
But we don't know.
Yep.
What's her goals? She's anything, like crawl, walk, maybe, like walk with a walker with wheels, you know, anything we can get, we'll take. Like any improvement from now, we'll take. But she's really slowly, she is improving, but it's very slow. So it's kind of, so she's 3, nearly 4 now, and she's almost, I think she's like a, you know, 12 month old baby that can't walk yet, sort of thing, or can't sort of sit up. Like she's 8 month old baby, I mean. So she's, I'm just hoping that I always hope that one day she'll wake up and sit up.
Yep.
Or say, hey, Dad. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'd love for that. But, you know, if it doesn't happen, then that's fine as well.
Yep. How does it feel when they did tell you that she had cerebral palsy? Like, what's your first emotion when that happens?
Well, actually, it was relief.
Right.
Because we knew that we knew that there was something.
Right.
Then it wasn't just that we were doing a bad job.
Yeah.
It was that there was an issue, and okay, now we can go forward and try and get something done.
Yeah.
So, relief. We're obviously upset. We're upset that, you know, that she's going to have to go through life like this. And we were scared for it at first, but like, it's not, you know, there was relief there to know that there's something, and now there's a pathway.
Yeah.
That we might be able to sort of access to get her to get as far as she can.
Yeah. So.
How scary is it in this day and age how much we rely on modern technology? It's not till your phone dies or the Wi-Fi or power goes off that you realise you'd be lost without it. Well, recently my phone decided in its old age to die and stop charging, and on a weekend no less. So what do? Rather than waiting to speak to the network providers or retail outlets, which can be painful within itself, give Brad or Katie a call at Greenies Apple Repairs. That's what I did, and they had my old phone as good as new in hours. Greenies take care of iPhones, iPods, iPads, and pretty much everything else, and they won't cost you an arm and a leg. So next time you're stuck back in the dark ages with no technology, contact Greenies Apple Repairs on 0401 229 220, or you can contact them at www.greeniesrepairs.com.au or find them on Facebook. Now just to get onto this busted screen. Do you have your bad days where you think, you know, poor us, we're doing it tougher than other people?
Yeah, you do, but not. I wouldn't say days. It's like, oh, geez, I wish you said that. It's like, hang on a second. And we know straight away, hang on a second, there's people that are way worse than us.
Yeah, perspective.
Yeah, perspective is a big thing. And, yeah, it's like, and you look at her and she just smiles at you. She's generally a very happy child unless something's really badly wrong.
Yeah.
Usually she's just happy. She's happy to be around us.
Yeah. Excellent. So, yeah. It's one of those things. It's always interesting when I look at a family that, you know, does have these challenges. When you don't have them, you think that if you're in that situation, you'd have the poor me's and, you know, why did this happen to us and all that sort of thing. But when you're in it, you just go into parent instinct, don't you? You're just living day to day. Like it doesn't dawn on you. I've been quite lucky. I've never had to go through anything like that. But anyone that I've spoken to on this podcast, it's been through, you know, challenging times like that, particularly with a family. You just adapt, don't you?
Yeah, you do. And that's us now. That's our life. So when we have to, okay. So one challenge we've got coming up is we're going to have to drastically renovate our house.
Yep.
Because it can't fit a wheelchair in it.
Yep.
So do we renovate? Do we move? We've been looking for a new house for months and months and months and months and months. Yep. And we can't find anything. So do we build? Righto, the cost of building's pretty high at the minute. Like, yep. You know, what do? Cost of land's so expensive. So, I mean, we've still got lots of challenges we're going to have to work through, but that's our life. It's just us now. That's just what it is.
Yep. Yeah.
You just try and factor it in.
Yeah. How did you explain it to Alfie when you had to tell him about his sister?
I never did.
Okay.
Meg may have. He is the best big brother that anyone could wish for, I reckon. I think he's the best big brother. Like, he does everything for her. The other day, Meg took a video of Evie was sitting up while she was watching some TV, and she was just sitting there. And Alfie happened to be in the background, and he turned around, and the look on his face was like, oh, she's sitting up. Who's holding her?
Yep.
And he was looking to see what was holding her up, and he was really, really excited for her.
Yeah. So,
for a six-year-old kid to be that excited for his three-year-old sister is a pretty big thing, and he's fantastic.
Yep.
And you know, he's missed out on things because of all this too.
Yeah. So,
which is why we made the decision to sort of Thursdays and Fridays are his days. He wants to play footy, he's playing footy, you know. Thursday, he wants to go and learn swimming, he's doing swim lessons and that sort of stuff. And that's time for me and him to go and do some stuff just on our own,
yep,
sort of thing. So, I know, you know, most kids get to do that, and it's part of everyday life, whereas he was missing out on that because it was just a bit of a tough job to get Evie out of the house, sort of thing.
Yep.
And me being a shift worker, I can't take him every week. So, you know, my mum's come on board to come out and look after Evie if I'm at work and Meg's going to take him into those things. And
yep. Just along the journey of the last few years, what would you say that your kids have taught you?
Oh, look, I don't know. It's just... Alfie, my son, he gets so excited about things, and the kids are so innocent. They are so innocent. And I just think that we should try and hold on to that innocent sort of thing.
Yep.
And maybe bring it into our own lives a little bit and just get excited about some things and enjoy the smaller things in lives rather than, you know, letting your ego get in the way and things like that. So I guess that, and like I see Alfie, and he loves going out and playing footy and things like that, and he's not that great at it. But he would be one of the most improved kids there, I'll tell you that, because at the start of the year, he couldn't get boot to ball.
Yep.
And now he can kick it. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. And he absolutely loves it. He gets so excited about doing things. And I just think that maybe we should take a bit of that, what children do, into our own lives. I watched a movie one time. I can't remember what the movie was called, but there was a major quote, and it says, We don't stop playing because we get old.
Yep.
We get old because we stop playing.
Yeah. Yep.
So maybe keep playing for a bit.
Yeah.
You know?
I agree. So, yeah. 100% agree with that. Because I think if we look back at our childhood, I think it's always your childhood version of yourself, which is the best version of yourself.
Yeah.
It's pure and you're not corrupted. Like I always say, no kid's born an asshole.
No.
I think we turn them into assholes.
That's because it.
We teach them to judge and we teach them how to, you know, backchat people and, you know, mouth people and things like that. But kids are just pure. And you look at, like, my boy at school, you know, not that my boy's any angel, but, you know, he's got friends from all different walks of life. He's got a boy who's from Egypt, a boy from India, things like that. And I'm massive on that with you. Like, you know, you need to, you need to treat everyone equally and things
absolutely.
Like that. But I think, unfortunately, I think, you know, as we get older and jaded, we seem to somehow corrupt the kids along the journey as well.
Yeah.
They lose that pureness that they've got as when they're younger.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. And I a lot of the time though, Brendan, I don't think we realise we're doing it. We don't mean to do it. It's not an outset where we go, right, we're going to teach them this.
We're going to turn you into a cynic.
Yeah, that's right. I just think it happens because of our own behaviours.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe we should all lighten up a bit, eh?
Absolutely.
We probably take something from that, can't we?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. People are going to have the notepads out for this chat, mate. Don't worry about that. Just onto your job now. We mentioned there at the start, so you know you're one of the fantastic workers down at Tazrail. So you're training up to be a loco driver yourself, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm a trainee train driver.
Yeah,
very exciting. I tell you, and I like the job too. Like, so I got the job on the cement, and I mentioned earlier that it was probably through my work at Savage River that got me there.
Yep.
Because one of my referees is a really good mate of mine who happened to know one of the bosses. So and he sort of got me in. You know, got me into the cement.
Yep.
And then from the cement, I applied to get an RO's job in Burnie. And I worked there for a year, and then the job came back up as a cement driver. And I was the only one that applied.
Yep.
So I got that.
Right place, right time.
Right place, right time. I got very, very lucky because usually, you know, to get onto a train, onto the footplate, as they call it, it's years and years of being an RO on the ground and things like that. And I got lucky. I did it for a year and got out of it. So I'm very, very lucky.
Yeah.
I know that I'm lucky, but
I'm taking it. Right place, right time.
Yeah, I'm taking it. I've had enough hardship.
One thing I was going to ask is, obviously you've spent a fair bit of time in the loco, and this is just for a bit of an education of people out there. How stupid are people around trains? Because you hear so many stories of near misses and things like that.
Look, mate, I'll tell you, the amount, when those lights start flashing, you've only got 20 seconds for the train hits that. At best, that's what you've got. And the amount of people, 20 seconds might seem like a long time, and the amount of people that run those lights, it's so dangerous because we can't stop.
Yeah.
I could slam the brakes on, and if I was to hit a car, that car is coming with me for probably 500 metres. So these things, they don't stop on a dime. You can't just go, and stop. It's a long process for that to happen. So, yeah, pretty serious. It's pretty serious running the lights. It's pretty dangerous. You're putting yourself at risk. And the train driver doesn't want to go through that either.
No.
They don't want to hit anyone.
Yeah.
That's the last thing you want to do.
Yeah.
So that's why, and that's why they're bipping the horn too. We had, so the Advocate, wrote an article the other week and the headline was cowboys, or something, calling train drivers cowboys, because they're upset about us bipping the horn as we go across the crossing and things like that. Especially in Burnie when we're shunting. We have slightly longer trains at the moment, so when you shunt, you've got to go across the road. Each time the train goes across, it's got to bip the horn. But it has to do that. That's legal obligation.
It's a safety protocol.
It's not because they want to do it.
Yeah.
They do it because they have to.
Yeah.
Yeah. The amount of people you see back up off lights, though, is also quite dangerous.
Because
they were going to go.
Yeah, and they thought, shit, he's a bit close.
He's close,
yeah.
So I don't like seeing that. That's because that scares you, because you don't have to have backed up far enough either.
Yeah.
But
like you say, you're not going to stop. You're just going to clip them and keep rolling.
That's right, yeah. That's it. So,
yeah.
And if you hit anything behind the loco, we're not going to know it's happened.
Yeah.
You're not going to know it's happened, so.
Yep. This is a part where we sort of want to go into a little bit about the Baron. You said that you rebranded the Baron, and what we're going to do is we're going to hear a little bit from the Baron now before we talk about the Baron.
Righto. So, I've been watching a few videos on the English language, because we all know I'm not real good at fucking learning that, am I? But it poses a few questions. For instance, the word physical. Right? The PH at the start makes an F sound. But if you think of the word fucking laugh, the two letters at the end make the F sound, which is a G and an H. And then when you think of the word through, the G and the H at the end don't make any fucking sound at all. But if you take the H and the R out of through, you get fucking tough. And then all of a sudden the GH has got something to fucking say about that. Meanwhile, you've got the letter F sitting over here like a spare dick in a fucking porno, doing fuck all. I just don't understand why we put two unrelated letters together to make a sound of a letter that we already possess in the fucking alphabet. Even in the fucking word alphabet, there's a fucking PH instead of a fucking F. Who wrote these words? And who has a fucking vendetta against the letter F? Fuck me. No wonder I'm struggling with these Learn English videos I've been trying. It's fucking ridiculous.
Tell us a little bit about the Baron now. And it's funny that you said before the Baron was non-verbal. He was talking. Now he's very much verbal. So how have you rebranded him, and how did that idea come about?
Well, so I saw, I've been watching TikTok. It was when I was training as an RO, the guy that was training me, Dan, he used to be on TikTok and he was scrolling through, and I was sort of, what are you watching there? What are you watching? Oh, he goes, I'm watching this TikTok. I went, I've heard of this app.
Yep.
I've heard of it. And I got on, I started watching, and I downloaded the app and all this sort of stuff. And I thought, oh, I could do some stuff like this. You know, the old Baron could come back in and do a bit of this. This is exactly what he used to do, because it was just people miming things.
Yep.
And then I put him up for two videos, and then I thought, nah, I've had enough of the hood. I've had enough of the glasses. I'm just going to be the Baron myself.
Yep.
And then I just kept doing that. And I was doing that for a little while. And I was just doing the same cliche stuff as everyone else was doing, like, you know, the miming stuff and the dances. And then I saw a few creators that were actually speaking on it, not miming.
Yep.
And I didn't even know that was a thing on TikTok. So that's how far behind I'd fallen. Since I've stopped doing marketing from Instinct Athletic and the strength then, I realised how far I'd fallen behind. But then I saw these other creators and they were doing things, they were actually speaking. So I started doing some things and little skits, and people liked it. I did a couple for mining where, one thing in mining, the dozer operator will always come in and complain about a truck driver.
Yep.
And then when that truck driver walks in, they're as nice as pie to them.
It's a lot of that.
Yeah. That was sort of one of the first videos I did. And it got like 50,000 views. I was like, what the
Yeah.
I've never had 50,000 views on a video before in my life. It was unreal, this thing.
So obviously people were sharing
it. People were sharing it, people were liking it. People started following me. All of a sudden I had 10,000 followers. What's going on here?
Yep.
And then, I was like, all right, this is cool. And I kept doing it. And I started doing these reaction videos. So the reaction videos were where I'd react to people doing DIY things. And it was, for some reason, I'd get tagged and all these people doing DIYs to toilet seats.
Yep. Turn them into basketball
hoops. Yeah, turn them into basketball hoops and fish tanks and things like that. And I was just like dumbfounded. And like, I couldn't believe people were doing it for starters. And I was enjoying doing it. It was good fun. Then I moved on to food, started doing like, people were doing like cooking silly things like pasta out of pasta and things like that. And people loved it. And I thought, oh, this is great. And then I actually saw a lady do a video similar to the one you just played on the PH. And I thought, I could do something similar to that. And I did one. It was pretty similar to what she did, except I swear a lot in my videos and that sort of stuff. So I sort of put my touch on it. And it went really well. I had like 500,000 views on this video. And by this time, from 100,000 followers to 350,000 followers was like almost in 2 weeks.
Wow.
It grew that. I was like, what is this? This is on steroids, this app. And I just kept going and going and going. But since I've done that PH video, everyone's talk. They basically send you your content. They'll just message and say, what about this letter in this word? And what about this word? And what about that? And I was like, yeah, I'd never thought of this. And this is pissing me off.
Yeah.
And so I just started doing videos on it. And people loved it. And now I've written a book.
Yep.
I've written a book on it.
Yeah.
So, So, you know, all of a sudden, 700,000 followers and the Baron talks now, as we said. I'm on Facebook now, I'm on Instagram, and I've written a picture book. So, like, it's... My life has drastically changed in the last year because of TikTok.
Yeah. Awesome. It's funny, Well, like I say, you talk about social media becoming its own beast. Like, it's obviously, you know, been productive for you in that way, hasn't it?
Really productive. And, like, I'm not making really any... I make a little bit of money on Facebook now because they pay you for views. But not make any money off it, per se.
Yep.
Which is why I've written the book, I suppose. You know, wouldn't mind earning something out of it. And people, I think they want it. Like, they've asked for it. So I said, right, I'll do it. And so
just how did that come about? Do you have to approach like a publisher or someone to help
you? No, I'm self-publishing. Yeah, I'm self-publishing. Yeah. I've already got a sample of it printed by a book company. So it's not going to be a bestseller by any means. Yep. It's basically an adult's poem in the form of a picture book.
Yep,
is what it is.
Just about the English language.
Just about the English language, but I've left enough there where I can write a sequel.
Could be a series.
So it could be a little series if it goes well. If it doesn't go well, it doesn't go well. Yeah. And do you know what? It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like we said before, it's always been my attitude. If I fail, I've tried.
Yep.
At least you've tried. So that's what I'm doing. And, you know, if I make a little bit of coin out of it to supplement my income, well, there you go. But I don't think I'll ever retire on it somehow.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like I said, like if it wasn't for that app, I wouldn't be, you know, probably wouldn't even be here having an interview with you right now, would I? So,
yep.
You know, it's as much as people, a lot of people shit on TikTok. They reckon, oh, this TikTok crap, blah, 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 but it's been a great deal of fun for me.
Yeah. I was going to ask you just again about shitting on stuff. You told me there before too, though, even though I can't imagine anyone not liking the Baron and loving it. Obviously, he's not going to be everyone's cup of tea, but you do cop a bit of social media hate and backlash and stuff.
Yeah, you do.
Why do people do that?
I don't know.
What gets them off?
For me, if I watch a video on Facebook or whatever that I don't like, what I do is I just swipe my finger up on it and it scrolls away the video. Then I can just forget about it.
Old-fashioned way of
doing
it.
Yeah, the old-fashioned way of doing it. But some people, they've got to go hit comment and tell you that you're a moron or that, you know, they're not... I think I was in embarrassment the other day, and it's like, I read them. I don't reply to them because there's no point in fueling their anger.
I was going to ask you, I'll let you keep going, but just with how you deal with it. So you do read them all, or is it?
I don't read every comment, no, because sometimes you get 1,000 comments on a video. I haven't got time to, but for some reason, you'll have days and you'll sort of scroll through your notifications. You'll see like a couple of nice comments. Oh, sweet, nice, nice. And you'll go and like those comments. And then there'll be another day where you'll go through and it's just all hate, and it's like, oh. What have I done there? And it's on all different videos, so you know that it's just people trolling you and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
You know. But I always try and consider the person that's made the comment. They might go, it might be that they've had a bad day that day and they just didn't want to hear my loud voice yelling at them on a...
Yep.
And I can understand that. But you can also scroll on as well.
Yeah, they don't have to open it.
Yeah. And it's like, it's annoying when you cop it. Like, I don't like it. No one likes to hear bad things about themselves.
Mm.
But, you know, I'm also putting myself out there. I'm also posting the video. I've deliberately posted the video. Should be able to take it if they're going to give it back to me as well.
Yeah.
As well. So, you know, I've got to do... It's part of the game, isn't it?
Yeah.
You play the game, you're going to get burnt sometimes.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, there is an easier way if they just scroll on.
Yeah. But it's funny though now with these social media platforms. I was only talking to someone about it the other day. You know, there's angry people out there and there's idiots out there. There's morons out there. But before social media, they seemed to be hidden in the shadows. You didn't have to hear from them. But now they've all got a platform to voice their personality, whether it's good, bad, or whether they're... Some people are negative on everything.
On everything, yeah, absolutely.
So, again, they've infiltrated into culture now as well.
Yeah, they have. And, I mean, I think that's just the way it is. I think there's far more good on social media than there is bad.
I was going to ask you that, yeah.
I think that the good outweighs the bad. The problem is the bad can be really bad, especially at school age.
And you talk about there before, you know, you're not sort of making a lot of money out of it, but that'll soon change because I see how many different areas you're going into now. You know, you've got the book, you've got your T-shirts now and your clothing line.
Yeah, I've got the clothing line there. Baron University. I've actually sold a fair few hoodies over the last few weeks, which has been pretty good.
Yep.
I don't make a great deal. So the way that business model works is I don't have to buy bulk.
Yep.
It's printed on demand, so I pay a bit extra for it when the person orders it. The money goes straight to the company that prints it for me. They pull it off the shelf, print it, and then send it out to them.
Yep.
So the lead time's a little bit longer. My costs are a little bit higher, but, you know, I never did it to make, you know, millions of dollars. I did it to try and help grow my brand.
Yep.
You know, the Baron brand. And since I've been doing the English words, it's grown into Baron University, and I'm the dean of that university. It's just a bit of fun, and people seem to enjoy it. It gives them a place to belong to if they want to on TikTok. They can come and join Baron University. Yep. The cost of admission's only a T-shirt or a hoodie, and you are in.
Yep, in the community,
right. Yeah, full scholarship, full ride.
So for anyone who's looking for the Baron, where is the best place to find you? There's plenty of good places.
The handle is The Actual Baron, all one word, and that's on TikTok, Instagram, and I've got an account called The Actual Baron on Facebook as well.
Yep.
But my other one is Dukes of Baron on Facebook, which is my bigger page.
Yep.
Yeah, so my smaller page is The Actual Baron, call it my backup page. And my big page is the Dukes of Baron on Facebook. So
yeah,
but the rest everywhere else is Actual Baron.
So, awesome, yeah. Mate. Well, like you say, you got 335,000 followers or something. That'll go up to 500 now.
This is promotion.
Don't worry right. about that. Yeah. But mate, like that's basically all I've got to chat to you about. And I know you know we've finished up on the Baron, and that's probably where you know you've probably got the higher profile. But it's been funny just chatting to you. I think you know the story, you know the Nathan story, and the things that you've been through. Like there's so many, and I know you take the piss on social media and stuff as well, but, you know, your story, there's so many lessons to learn out of that. And, again, I'll do a quick recap at the end of it, but just the main things, you know, the business things, you know, of just having a go and not being afraid to fail.
Yeah.
And hopefully, you know, people do take a lot out of that. And it's funny that, you know, you don't think about your relationships and your story as being able to teach others, but you've had your own unique challenges in being a fly-in, fly-out worker.
Yeah.
And, you know, with your parenting and with your family dynamic, there's plenty of things that people are going to take out of that, mate. So, yeah, I really appreciate your time. Like, we spend a bit of time at work together anyway, but yeah. It's always good to sit down. And as I say, the beauty of this format is, you know, I get to learn a hell of a lot more about people than you do, you know, just hollering over a train carriage.
That's right.
Hollering over a wagon to you. So,
yeah.
Yeah, really appreciate you coming.
I really appreciate you inviting me, mate. I had a great time doing it, so yeah, it was a nice little trip down memory lane, to be honest. Like, I mean how many people out there would actually sit there and think about their entire life and then and talk about it? Like, you don't get that opportunity, so to give me that opportunity to do that and reflect on a lot of things that I probably haven't reflected on that I should have done was a big thing. So yeah, I appreciate it, mate.
Yeah, all the best for the Baron and all the best for Nathan.
No worries, thank you very much.
Good on you, mate. Cheers. A great story, and as I said, so many lessons to take from Nathan and his journey. What I always say I love about this project, it's learning the stories behind the people that you don't see on the surface. The Baron appears bulletproof, but the man behind the character has plenty of challenges of his own, and I hope everyone can take something from his story. My main takeaways in the chat were, in any relationship, you need to have compromise and communicate, particularly during hectic times and when the situation's not ideal. In business, don't be afraid to fail, as you're better to try and fail than not try at all. And as the great quote that Nathan said was, you don't have to be great to start, but you have to start to be great. With any business, pay attention to what the market wants and make sure you have a strong online presence, as people won't come to you if they don't know that you exist. And always maintain that personal touch in business. Meet people, talk to people, and handle as much as you can face to face with clients, as the world's still crying out for that. In parenting, love your children for what they are, celebrate their successes, and always focus on and be thankful for what you have. And lastly in life, never grow up, keep a childlike attitude of excitement, and always take in and enjoy the little things. Thanks for listening, and as always, if anyone's got any other great stories out there that they think would be worth having a chat to, make sure you hit us up on socials. As Northwest Tassie is a remote area, I just want to quickly tell you about a great organisation doing their bit to help the rural community deal with mental health and suicide. Rural Alive and Well, or better known as RAW, R-A-W, have a mission to build healthy and resilient rural and remote communities to reduce the prevalence of suicide. RAW specialises in providing a proactive outreach and one-on-one support service, which addresses situational stresses and increases protective factors to minimise the risk of suicide. RAW is non-clinical, genuine and non-intrusive. The service is confidential with no fees for participants, and it uses a person-centred shared goals approach. RAW adopts a culturally sensitive, strength-based and collaborative approach to delivering services. Their team come from a range of backgrounds and receive training and ongoing support to provide evidence-informed care to people. To access their services, call 1800 729 827. You can find them on Facebook and Instagram, or jump on their website, www.rawtas.com.au.